There's a lot of things going on.
This is a very zany kind of game.
It was ahead of its time.
It's really clever what they've done.
It's tense, but it's very brain melty.
It's kind of a mix of everything I love in trick taking.
Hey everyone, welcome to Trick Talkers, your favorite podcast about trick takers, shedders, climbers, and other card games. I'm Johnny.
I'm Ryan.
And I'm Patrick.
And tonight's episode is brought to you by Ryan Hopkins and Faridin, our two patrons. Thank you, guys.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Tis the season. This is our holiday special. So it's 5 days before Christmas, and we're all getting ready for the holidays. We figured we would talk about a Christmas-themed game. But I think before we do that, what are you guys' plans for the holidays? Anything special going on? Any games that you hope to get played?
Plenty of games. For me personally, I am trying to finish up the 10x10 challenge that my wife and I started. For those unaware of what a 10x10 is, this was created on Board Game Geek by a person named Sarah Reed, where you pick 10 games to play 10 times throughout a single calendar year. And we have left ourselves with 35 plays and only 11 days left in the year.
Wow.
So we're going to be taking that Christmas weekend to play through all 35 plays.
It depends what you put on there.
So do you not have any family commitments?
Nope. We are not going back to Maryland to hang out with the family. It's just going to be the two of us staying here in Pittsburgh.
Nice. Well, good luck. That sounds like a lot of fun. What are some of the games that you have?
Ooh, yeah. I don't know if fun is the right word. It might be Hell Week or Hell Weekend, but we'll see. So ones that we have left are, we have one more unlock to do. We have a couple plays of Trails of Tucana, 3 plays of Bridge City Poker, 3 plays of Metro X, 4 plays of Railroad Inc., 5 plays of Jaipur, 5 plays of On Tour, 6 plays of King Domino Origins, and 6 plays of Sagrada. So thankfully, they're all like roll-in rights and quicker card games. So it is definitely obtainable. We can do it, but it is going to be a slugfest.
So you're not one to like put down a book if you no longer are enjoying it, or like stop a movie halfway through. Like, you got to finish this even if it's hell.
So the thing is, it's actually Michelle that is more about it than I am. I've been telling her for probably the past 3 or 4 months, we're not going to do this. It's not going to get done. And she's like, no, it's going to get done. We're going to do it. On Christmas, that weekend, we are going to play all of these games. We are going to love it and hate it, but we're going to do it.
Well, dedication. I feel like there was a song, though, when you were reeling it off. You were like, you know that song, The 12 Days of Christmas, 5, 4 calling birds, 3 French hens, and you were going, the 5 Metro X. I feel like there's something there in it, but maybe we won't do the full rendition of it.
I think if Ryan had put a little bit more thought into it before the episode, maybe he could have made it into that jingle.
Do you want to just say it again and sing it? Maybe that'd be interesting.
Man, put him on the spot. It's a good thing we're not live.
I know, right? Yeah, it's too much pressure on the air.
Yeah, yeah.
So, and just in case for any listeners who was counting, I only listed 9 games, and that's because we have actually completed one game already, and that was Welcome to the Moon. We have played our full 10 plays of that game.
Wow. That's a good, it's one I want to try, actually. I feel like Nana and Nana Christmas would have been a cop-out to put on there because you can play through them so quickly. Great games, but of course.
Also, not sure I would want to do a 2-player because we are doing all these games strictly right, just the two of us. So we aren't playing with anybody else. Not that we're avoiding it. It's just whenever we've been together, just the two of us playing a game, we're like, all right, let's do one from there. And if people come over, we end up picking a different game anyways.
That makes sense. You can probably guess what's at the top of my list. Yeah, it's just about to roll off my tongue, but it begins with an R and ends with an O. So there can only be one game. Any thoughts, guys?
Oh, wait, are we guessing? Or are the listeners guessing?
Well, yeah, that was the idea. We didn't plan this before we started talking, of course. But
I thought this was one of those things where you wait for 5 seconds for people listening to guess, and then you just say it.
Okay, well,
you just hear them shouting into their phone.
Yeah, it's our echo, and our eco, if you like, of course it is. No doubt that will be coming out. Did a bit of recycling over Christmas, so much wrapping paper, got to get rid of it somehow. Alongside the game, of course. I won't get rid of the game, but there we go. And then Ready, Set, Bet, that wild horse racing simultaneous betting game that I've been pinning my hopes on to get played. Should be a good one with the in-laws, hopefully. Looks like a lot of fun. There's a game called Das Motorsport Spiel. That's Das Motorsport Spiel. And really funky game from 1995. It's gone out of print. It comes in a plastic tube. Haven't even played the game yet, but I've already bought sort of, you know, these custom tracks from a professional printer, got them printed, and they take up your entire table. They're over a meter and a half long. So, yeah, you get a set of metal cars with it, and off you go to the races. So we'll see how we get on with that one. Prophecy, the trick-taking game, that's a remake. I shouldn't say remake. It has its roots in 99, but it's a bit more wacky because you've got power cards, and it supports, you know, a greater number of players. Looks really interesting. And finally, Ave Caesar, a chariot racing game where you sort of have to shout Hail Caesar as you're, you know, you go past the chariot racing pit stop, if you like. And that is sort of card driven, a bit like the game Heat or Flamme Rouge that, you know, a lot of people are aware of. So I should ask for any thoughts on those between you two, but you're probably going to give me some stick about Arreco again.
I haven't heard of anything that you listed except for Arreco. Okay.
What about you, Ron? Have you heard of any of these?
I've heard of Arreco, Ready, Set, Bet, Prophecy, and Ave Caesar. I'm most interested in Prophecy,
okay,
for sure, being card game and, you know, trick-taking in our nature of the podcast.
There you go.
But yeah, I will say the Das Motorsport Spiel, while I don't really know anything about it, when I was watching that like video or GIF that you showed of all the maps, it just made me think of the old 90s child's carpet.
Yeah.
I don't know if you guys had this in the UK, but it was pretty big in the US in the 90s. It was like it just had a picture almost of like a city and had streets on it. And there was like a hospital in one area, a school in another. I'm sure anybody who knows what I'm talking about is already picturing this in their head. If you don't, we'll put a picture in the show notes so you can click it and see what I'm talking about. But I feel like that was what your maps were looking like. It's just what it was making me think. And I wanted to just get that and play on that.
Yeah, it comes in a plastic tube. You get a certain amount of time to take you go. You're under pressure. The missus laughed at me. She sort of said, she told all my friends, Patrick's buying Hot Wheels racing games. And he's in his 30s. What's happened to him? And I said, no. There is some tactics to it. Trust me. Have a look. Give it a go.
Are the tactics vroom, vroom, go fast?
Yes, something like that. And push the cars along as you go and make exhaust noises. But we'll save that for a rainy day. Where do you go from there? Maybe the main topic. Maybe.
Well, I feel like I'm most excited to hear what Johnny's got planned for.
Oh, yes. Sorry, Johnny. Yeah, last but not least.
I'm chopped liver to Patrick. So I don't... We'll probably get a fair amount of gaming. Christmas Eve, we've got the Feast of the Seven Fishes at my wife's parents' house. But Christmas Day, I don't think we have any plans. So hopefully we get some gaming. And then I actually bought Aeon's End Legacy of Gravehold for my wife for Christmas because I was actually getting ready to sell or trade Aeon's End because I'd had it for so long and I tried it once at four players and the group didn't hate it, but they didn't love it. And then it just sat there for years and I was like, all right, it's fine time to get rid of it. And she said, well, why don't we try playing it? And she really liked it. And I like legacy games, so I thought that might be a fun thing for us. And I know that Ryan has talked it up quite a bit in Discord, so I figured if he likes it, it could go either way.
That's probably a safe assumption.
I'm kidding.
Ryan's seal of approval.
For those who haven't listened to previous episodes, I joke about how Ryan likes everything, so I can't really trust his reviews.
But so I still feel like there's a degree of the amount I like something. There's usually like I will always like a game for the most part because I admire the design of it. But there are some where I'm just like, oh, no, I'm like gushing over it. I love it. This is amazing. And like Aeon's End is one of those games. I will say, though, I agree at four players, unless everybody at the table is an Aeon's End like nuthead, it's probably not going to be a good time. I usually only play it with one or two people now. And most of the time when I'm soloing it, I'll just do like two player multi-handed. But for the legacy campaign, I think it's great to do that at four players. because it's just an experience. Legacy games, you're unopening stuff, you're seeing all the stickers, you're getting more of them in use. Not to say that two players bad for it, but basically what I'm getting at, I've played the Aeon's End Legacy of Gravehold campaign twice, and I own all of the Aeon's End stuff in general. So like, I love that game. So I'm really excited to get your thoughts on it. You do play it.
Well, I was going to just keep it as strictly a two-player thing that the two of us play through, but now I'm questioning it. But I don't want to make it more players, because then we probably play it less frequently, because we don't do game nights as often with friends.
Yeah. Well, the nice thing, though, is if you only do two players, you sort of have enough extra content left over. You could theoretically play again with the other two characters and players stuff that wasn't used. Because like I said, there's more stickers and more things that you'd go that are going to get unused in a two-player game.
Could you do that without the recharge pack? Or would you still need the recharge pack?
Certain things you would need the recharge pack. Without trying to give any spoilers, there are certain things you do like on the map itself that doesn't matter the player count, you would make the effects to. But what you could simply do is just like get out a piece of paper and write what you did on a piece of paper instead of actually stickering the map on your first playthrough.
Oh, no.
And then on your second playthrough, if you wanted to. I'm telling you how you circumvent the reset pack is all I'm getting at.
I appreciate it. I'm going to pay for the recharge pack if we want to do it again, though. I think the stickering and the ripping things up and all that is more than half the fun, maybe. I don't know. I was going to say half, but...
Well, look, it nearly made its end on your shelf, didn't it, Johnny? So at least you've opened the box and you're giving it a go.
Yeah. Yep. So, hopefully we get some of that in. My wife's parents will be here, so hopefully we can play some Nana, Hearts, and Wingspan, which I can safely say here, because my wife will never listen to this, I don't really want to play Wingspan. I've played a bunch of Wingspan, but it's one of her favorite games, and I did just get her the expansion for Christmas, so I know we're gonna end up having to play that.
So did you get the nesting box as well?
No, that's ridiculous.
Okay.
wait, did you get it?
No, I don't own Wingspan at all. I don't. I think that game's fine. I will go on and record and say there is a game that I don't really like, and that is Wingspan. It is a really good medium weight game for what it does. Again, this is where I like it for what it does for the hobby, and obviously as big as it got in the New York Times Magazine and whatnot. But it's fine. It's just fine.
Yeah, I think gameplay wise, it's okay. I've just played it enough that I'm bored of it. But to me, the interesting part is the artwork is great, and you do learn a lot of fun facts about the different birds. So I think that's interesting.
Well, just to drop the bombshell further, I had Wingspan. I sold it. I like the look of it, and I appreciate I'm treading on eggshells here. But like you, Ryan, for me, it was just fine. You know, I think, from a female designer, getting more female designers acclaimed in the hobby, that's a really good thing. And, you know, and kudos to the team that put it together. And it's a well-made game, but it just wasn't one of my favorites.
Well, I think that's fair.
Agreed.
Do we want to talk about Ghosts of Christmas?
Should we go into the future and talk about the Ghosts of Christmas?
I think we should stay in the present.
Well, if we looked at this episode in the past, I'd say it was a pretty well put together episode, but we're not quite there yet.
I give it like a 6.5 at best.
I was gonna say. Well, actually, I was gonna not say, but since you're saying it.
Oh boy. Anyways, Ghosts of Christmas. So that's gonna be our main game we're gonna talk about in today's episode. Seems pretty fitting for a holiday episode. And Ghosts of Christmas, how does it play? Well, the deck makeup in the game has four suits numbered 1 through 12. And in a three-player game, you remove the 1, 2, and the 3 of each suit. After that, though, you'll deal 12 cards to each player. In turn order, players will bid how many tricks they think they will take in the round. And you'll do this by grabbing these little purple doors that you'll put in front of you to show the number of tricks you're going to take. So 4 tricks, 4 purple doors. However, there are these additional red doors that you can take, which is sort of a one-trick buffer to your bid, but you can never take more than one red door. So if I wanted to bid 4 tricks, I could take 4 purple doors, or I could take 3 purple doors and 1 red door, I'll get to the difference of why that is when we get to scoring. But for trick play in Ghosts of Christmas, it is a must follow, with the red heart suit being the trump suit. The neat twist in this game, though, there's a couple of them. The first one is there are three active tricks going at a single round in the game, essentially. They are known as eras. There's the past, the present, and the future. So when a player, when it's their turn to play a card, you can play it at any era that you have not already played to. So if you play the first card into that era, that card becomes the lead suit for the trick play. So if I lead yellow in the past, then Johnny and Patrick would have to follow with the yellow suit if they have it in hand when they play to the past. But you're never locked into which era you have to play to on your turn. Once all players have played to all three eras, you're then going to determine the winner of those three tricks. The way you calculate who wins the trick is the highest of the trump suit. If there's no trump, then it's the highest of lead suit wins. The way you go in the order of the tricks, though, is a little bit different. So during trick play, there are these little dials that once you lead to a trick, you flip it over to show what suit it is. But when you're determining the winner, you can sort of flip those dials back over and ignore them, because the suit of the winner of the previous trick is what determines the lead suit for that trick. That might sound a little confusing, but essentially I lead yellow on that past suit and I win the trick. I am the leader for the second, the present suit, regardless of if I'm the one who actually led it during trick play. And then let's say Johnny wins the second trick. He is leading the future trick to determine what that lead suit was, regardless of what was actually played during trick play.
Which is really thematic when you think about it, because we're starting in the past. We don't know who's leading the tricks until after the past has resolved and it becomes the present and so forth.
Yeah, no, it's done very well. And then after the winner of the future has been decided, they keep the start player token because they will be the leader for the next round of tricks, and they will also determine the lead suit for the past. But you're going to do this four rounds across of three tricks for a total of 12 tricks. After all 12 tricks are played, you then will score points based on if you hit your bid or not. In Ghosts of Christmas, it's pretty much an all or nothing. If you miss your bid, doesn't matter by how many, you will score 0 points. If you hit your bid and you took a red door, you score 1 point per trick that you took. So going back to my earlier example, I bid 3 purple doors and 1 red door. I took 3 tricks. I will score 3 points. Regardless of if you use your red door or not, you still only score 1 point per trick. But if you don't use any red door, you'll get 2 points per trick. So if I took 4 purple doors, took 4 tricks, I'm scoring 8 points for that round. You'll then play a round equal to the number of players, and after the number of rounds, the most points will win. Hopefully that wasn't too confusing.
It's hard to say because I know the rules. Hopefully for somebody who didn't already know the rules, it was easy enough to follow along. I think it was well done. Good job.
If not, we can just go back to the past, re-listen to it again, and then just jump back to the future here and pretend like you already know how to play.
Well, it's the present now. It will be the future when they're listening to it.
Oh, my God. It's trippy.
Back to the future.
I think we should go to the future or stick in the present. And so what is everybody's thoughts about this game?
From a production perspective, they've smashed it out of the park. Right, this game, it's... given where it's come from, which was, taking a step back, Time Palatrix, the previous version of this game, I feel like the Christmas theme, you don't see that enough in board games. So to bring the Christmas theme to it, Christmas Carol in this case, I think it marries really well with, as Johnny, you touched on when Ryan was talking about the rules in terms of thematics here, your... playing to the tricks and then kind of going back and retrospectively saying, okay, well, the leader of that trick was determined by the winner of the the card play, and going back to it and looking at it. And for me, that aids the having the concept of the past, the future, and the present and the ghosts of Christmas, if you like. I'm lucky enough to own the upgraded bits, the wooden pieces. It's fun trying to put it all back in the box. That's a game in itself. And of course, the lovely dials that come with the game as well. So
I don't know. According to Ryan, there's plenty of space. Although I also had trouble getting it all back in there.
I didn't say plenty of space. I said if you can Tetris it well enough, there is enough space to make it work.
Even with sleeves?
Even with sleeves, yes. That top hat makes a big problem. That is tough to get in there. But
see, I don't know how you get it in there with sleeves because I could barely fit it in without sleeves. The top hat is ridiculous, though. It's funny that it's so ridiculous, but because of how tight the space in the box is, I'm kind of tempted to just get rid of it and use the cardboard hat instead.
It's an option.
Johnny's going to abstract it away with a cube or something. Yeah, it's not quite the same, but I get it.
Yeah. I know, I'm just being a Grinch.
Yeah, I could make an instructional video on how to pack it away if you need me to. So I just want to touch on one thing here, Patrick. When you said that not a lot of games use the Christmas theme, so it works well with this one. While I agree that Ghosts of Christmas works with the past, present, future theme really well, I think the reason why a lot of games don't have a Christmas theme is because then it pigeonholes your game to only really being played around the holidays.
I get it.
It kind of goes into, you know, we're having a holiday special. We're only talking about Christmas games. Like we're talking about Ghosts of Christmas now. Like Time Palette Tricks, you can shut anybody at any time. And it's like, okay, the theme is barely existent. Sure, it's the time travel bit. But then like with the Ghosts of Christmas, if you're bringing it out in August, it might not be a problem, but people might make the like, why are we playing a Christmas game in August? So,
yeah. And also, I think there are more Christmas games than Hanukkah games. So make a Hanukkah game.
That too.
Are there any other than Dreidel?
I think that's the call out. Everybody who's listening should come up with something.
Maybe they should have got licensed by Back to the Future, you know, the franchise. And then you could have been like, wow, Marty McFly is going back. And people, you could play that any time of year, right? It just works.
True.
Yeah. I actually think that would be a great theme. I don't know how the theme would be incorporated, but I'm a big Back to the Future fan, so I like the idea of it. I really like this game. I know we're going to talk a little bit more about scoring, so I won't get too into it. But I don't like the way that the bidding and the scoring works in this game. But I really, really enjoy the actual gameplay. I think it's really interesting to have kind of like a Monster Trick-esque type of gameplay during the trick, and then have it kind of flipped on its head because you have one more thing that you have to think about, which is who's going to win the trick before the one that I'm playing into. And it can be both a good or a bad thing. Sometimes you want to just slough off cards and you don't want to win the tricks. So if you can see that somebody else is winning earlier tricks, sometimes you can get rid of high cards that you can now play offsuit, even if you're starting the trick. And especially like if you can keep track of when people are offsuited and things. Card counting, if you will. Just kidding. But I think there's really, really interesting and really unique decisions in this game that no other trick taker that I've played does. And then you get to scoring and it's like, womp womp. Like, it's just really bad. I hate the scoring in this game. And we've actually tried one of the variants and we've talked about some variant scorings that aren't even included in the rulebook that might work better. But other than that, this is fantastic. I agree on the production. I haven't actually played with the physical game because we've played online together, and that's the only time I've played this game. But obviously, I've unboxed my copy, and maybe I'll take that out for Christmas, although I think it might make my in-laws' heads explode. So,
yeah, it can certainly be a tougher one. I would agree this game is more meant for seasoned trick takers than, you know, less seasoned players, because of the fact that any game that requires bidding already makes it a little bit harder. But the fact that the playing to different parts of the past, present, or future, creating the ability to slough off in a suit that you otherwise would have had to have follow in, like you said, makes really cool, interesting plays that don't show up in other trick takers, but would make it really hard for somebody who has to evaluate their hand at the beginning of the round and then figure out how many tricks I'm going to take, not having any idea about, oh, this card can go here later and then I'm actually losing when I thought I was going to win with it.
Yeah.
So I could see that being a little bit tougher for that kind of crowd.
Honestly, I think if I wanted to play this style of game, but something easier to teach, I'd probably just play Monster Trick.
Well, this is like, for me, it's like Monster Trick 2.0. You've got, to use a few food examples, it's crunchier than my cereal that I have in the morning this game is. It's almost like they're giving you a cake and then they're adding a tier on top of it when you're thinking about how you play. It's ends up being quite thinky. And whether or not you find that fun is obviously subjective. I find it fun. I like playing it, but it's not, it's certainly not when you compare it to something like Skulking, which is kind of a beer and pretzels relaxed in a casual manner game. This game really demands quite a lot, especially when you throw the scoring in, which is almost like going to your favorite restaurant, having a lovely meal, and then finding a piece of glass in your ice cream on the last, you know, the last dish. And go, no, you know, that kind of ruined the experience, because actually I had such a good game, but then the scoring punished the hell out of me. Fortunately, I do think the saving grace on that is there is the Tiny Tim variant, which removes the bidding, and your scores are based on the number of tricks you took, you know, in a similar way to Fox in the Forest. And for me, that kind of, I love the Tiny Tim variant. I'm glad it's there, because if it was just the bidding and just that scoring, I probably would be less warm on the game than I am. So I think, thank God they at least put something in there. And that makes it a bit more accessible to the people who aren't seasoned trick takers, going back to your point, Ryan and Johnny.
Yeah, and I think, so to touch a little bit more on the scoring and why we, or at least I, dislike it. So the original scoring rules are, if you hit your bid and you didn't use a red door, you get 2 points per trick. I know Ryan already taught this, but...
just in case, just double checking that you know how to play.
Just for continuity. So you get 2 points per trick. If you had a red door, you get 1 point per trick. And the reason, if you didn't hit your bid, you get zero. The reason that I dislike it isn't because it's punishing if you miss your bid. It's because it incentivizes you to bid high. You can't really win the game unless you bid high. So if you have a bad hand, or you think you have a bad hand, and you want to bid low, you're basically just saying, I give up, I quit, I'm not going to win this game. So it doesn't just require a higher level of experience to evaluate your hand. It requires you to have a hand that you're confident can actually win more tricks. And I just inherently dislike that in games. It's one of the things that I really dislike about the original Skulking scoring rules. I have not gone back and tried it with the new rules, the Rascal rules or whatever Pat told me. But games that really force you into bidding high, I just think it takes away a lot of what makes bidding games fun for me. The Tiny Tim variant, I think, is an improvement, although still imperfect. It has, like Pat said, the Fox in the Forest style scoring. If you shoot the moon, if you get zero tricks, you get 6 points. If you get between one and six tricks, you get 1 point per trick. And if you get more than six, you get no points.
I just want to jump in. That's for the 3-player. 4-player is 1 to 5 threes is 1 point per, and then 6 and above is 0 points. But continue. Okay.
So I think that's better, but it still incentivizes you to either shoot the moon or bid six. You know, like, you're not going to bid two, because even if you hit it, you get 2 points. That's not going to generally be enough to win you the game, because there's a total of 12 tricks to be won. If you're only winning two of them, you're not going to be scoring enough points to win. So I think a better variant, in my opinion, would be shooting the moon gets you so many points. Getting 1 to 6, if you hit your bid, gets you a fixed number of points, regardless of whether your bid was 2 or 5 or 6. and then overshooting gets you zero again. I think that would be a more balanced way to do the scoring.
In Skull King's defense, Johnny, I think, to be fair, with Skull King, you know, a lot of the cards are out of the game, and you start with a small hand and you escalate up. What you're asking players to do with Ghost of Christmas is you've got essentially all the cards, you know, are in play. And not only that, you're asking them to make a decision based on their hand, based on things that are going to happen and, you know, who relative to who won the trick and look back at it retrospectively. And to ask somebody who is not necessarily a seasoned trick taker or hasn't played this game, you know, several times, that's quite a big ask. And so I can see why some people might be intimidated in a way playing Ghosts of Christmas, certainly compared to Skull King, which is, you know, using that example again, the lighthearted, the slowly increasing the card count and then asking you to make a bid versus here's all your cards, now decide.
Yeah, I mean, I guess my point is I don't think it matters whether you're seasoned or not. I think the scoring is bad even if you're playing with all seasoned players, because it still forces you, if you want to be competitive, to bid high even if your hand is not worthy of a high bid.
Correct. Yeah, I'd agree with that as well. There was, even in our last game we played, there was a point where I was 6 points ahead of Johnny. I was in first, he being in second. And just knowing the number of tricks he had to bid to not even just catch up to me, but go ahead of me, was a potentially absurd amount of tricks if his hand wasn't that way, if he didn't have a good enough hand to do it. But because he was sort of forced to make that bid to even have a chance to catch up, kind of seems a little silly. You should just be able to make the bid that you want no matter what and be rewarded appropriately. And I know we sort of had the conversation that I think a variant to try and add is the Nokus dice, where if you hit your bid, you'll get bonus points. And based on the number of people that hit their bid, you'd share those bonus points. So even if you bid two tricks and you hit your two tricks, sure, you'll score the 2 points for that, but then you're going to get, say, 10 extra bonus points, making it worth to go for that lower number, because you'd still might be able to get more points regardless of if another person bids high.
Yeah, and potentially, if you're not trying to win a bunch of tricks, you can maybe manipulate things to try to push as many people out of their bid as possible so you can collect a higher majority of those bonus points if they're split among whoever takes it. I want to try it that way. Although I guess I should just play Nokus Dice because that's my favorite game.
Ghosts of Nokosu. I mean, what do we think to... I'm going to ask you guys, what do you think to the value of having these red doors? Does it... To me, I'll answer first and then, you know, see what you guys think. But to me, it is not enough of an incentive, especially later on in the game, relative to the scores, to have... I mean, it's nice that they've got it, but I don't really see it being much of an incentive versus, you know, the point differential. You can either get double the amount of points or half the amount of points and take a red door to have the flexibility.
Yeah, I think it could be something that you'd use maybe in the first round to just make sure, you know, you give yourself more wiggle room to get on the board, making sure you don't get 0 points, because, you know, any points is better than zero. But later in the game, again, when you're 6, 7, 8 plus points ahead or behind, you can't take the red door if you actually want a chance of trying to catch up with anybody.
In fact, it actually makes it easier to stay in the lead once you're in the lead, because you can give yourself that buffer. And even though you're only collecting 1 point per trick, it might be just enough to keep the victory out of reach of somebody else without them having to bid 5 or 6 tricks in the final round, which is mostly impossible to hit.
Yeah, and that actually is perfect that you said that, because going back to the example of our game where you were that many points behind, I bid using the red door, knowing that it gave me that buffer to make sure that I had a little bit more wiggle room. And even if I still hit my bid at 1 point apiece, it was going to stay ahead of what your bid was. So right. It's better almost for keeping the leader in that position than it is for a person who's just not confident about their bid.
Rich get richer kind of.
Yeah, instead of giving the people in the back a blue shell, it's giving red shells for the leader to throw backwards.
Somebody likes the Mario Party. Not Mario Party, Mario Kart. Yeah.
But I think we said, you know, just playing Nokus dice in the end might be the result, but I'd still like to try this with that extra bonus for hitting your bid scoring. Because the idea of this game being almost a mashup of, well, in this variant, I should say, of being a mashup of Nokus dice and Monster Trick sounds neat. But the resolution of the trick in Ghost of Christmas with the past, present, future is what I still want to mess with. That's why I want to keep playing this. And just to quickly go over another variant that is in the official rulebook that we haven't talked about yet is the Beyond variant. So it adds a fourth trick to the row. So you still have 12 cards, but you play four tricks before they all clear. So you're doing three rounds of four tricks instead of four rounds of three tricks. And this can add a little bit more spice to where you slough cards off, being able to run out of suits faster, potentially giving you more wiggle room on cards that you may be able to win with. So that can potentially help with some of the bidding issues, but it still doesn't change the scoring. The scoring remains the same.
Yeah, I was being a bit tongue-in-cheek when I said we should just play Nokus Dice, because adding Nokus Dice scoring to this game doesn't make it Nokus Dice. I think that this, like I said earlier, the gameplay is really fun. There's a lot of interesting decisions that you don't find in any other game, at least that I've played, and I've played quite a few. So I think this game, there's merit to putting this game on the table just for the fun of the trick play. And I think if the scoring could be fixed, this is a game that would probably see a lot of table time because it is so unique and so interesting.
And the top hat, don't forget. But we see games, I mean, I haven't played it yet, but Dwas, for example, and I'm pretty sure that's the correct pronunciation, I believe that's got quite punishing scoring for missed bids. And perhaps, you know, looking at Taiki's style and his way of designing games, this is just something that's, in some of these games, is intuitive to the way he designs the games and intends the games to be. And, you know, if you don't make your bid, then kind of it's tough luck and you're falling behind. And that's just kind of, I guess that's the vibe that seems to run through some of the other games. Not all of them, but some of these other games like Dwas.
I actually wish it was a little more punishing. Like, I think that if you miss your bid and you didn't use a red door, you should get -1 for every trick that you missed by. But if you use a red door, you lose double. Because then the leader can't just sit on a red door in the last round, because now if they miss it with the buffer, they're losing double points. That might be an interesting...
Hmm. Yeah, I mean, if you had that negative point value associated with it, it forced them into more exact bids to sort of stay honest. So that's pretty interesting.
Yeah, I mean, I just came up with this literally right now, so it probably was imperfect. It definitely was imperfect, but
got a buffer
I think
deal.
There might be...
Something
there
to it.
There might be something there. There might be something.
Let us know in the future how it is.
Yeah, I'll let you know beyond.
Perfect.
I don't know what that sound was. Did you do something to frustrate yourself?
Maybe. I don't know.
Did you say something was definitely interesting? Or I don't know. What is it that you say all the time?
No, I think I was just doing that because I realized that I've been around Patrick too long and now I'm making these terrible jokes.
Yeah, I applaud it, Rye. Great effort.
Oh, yeah.
not sure if I accept the applause.
Oh, no, you are.
But I guess I'll take it.
Yeah, take it.
So, I know Ghost of Christmas is our main topic, but there, for those looking for games to play with their families this holiday season, Ryan, you put together a list of a few other options that people could play.
I did.
What are those?
So, starting out here real quickly, harder to get a hold of, but Christmas Nana, fantastic game, super fun, super silly, memory deduction game that when you read the rules, sounds like a game that isn't going to be that great, but trust me, you just got to play it. Fantastic time. You're just trying to match three of the same number by asking different players for their highest or lowest card or flipping cards that are in the middle of the table face up. Super great. I know all of us around here have played it. I'm pretty sure every one of us has a copy. So, and I know Johnny said he's going to try and get that to the table for Christmas. So,
I do have a copy, but I have not played it. And I did not go for the Christmas copy.
Oh, Johnny.
Wait, so wait. Am I just finding out you've never actually played Nana? I swear you've played before.
Yeah. You would be wrong.
Ooh, okay. Well,
we need to get it played.
Don't swear on anything important.
I swear on my copy of Nana. I've got three of them, so it's fine.
Don't do that; it might disintegrate.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I think I know what we're gonna play next.
Yeah, it's a great game.
It's not even a trick taker, but
all right, fair enough. It's not a trick taker. Yeah, I haven't committed any cardinal sins. We're a trick taking podcast. It's not a trick taker.
Fair. So okay, then this is actually great, I guess. Since you've never played it, you've obviously heard from so many people. You've heard the hype. You've obviously got a copy. So what about the game are you excited to explore?
Honestly, I just love the artwork. So you actually said this earlier, but I didn't buy it for the longest time, despite really loving the artwork, because I was buying so many games. And I read the rules, and it just didn't sound like it was going to be that great. And what everybody says is, this is one of those games where you read the rule book, and you think, meh, or maybe worse. And then you play it and it just blows the expectations out of the water. And I heard enough people say that between that and loving the artwork, I've decided I should just own a copy of this. But because the rules don't do it justice, I couldn't tell you what I'm excited about other than seeing if it meets the expectations that everybody else has set for me. Maybe people built it up too much. I don't know.
Yeah, you want. Yeah. If you can have a laugh with a group of friends, which I'm pretty sure you can, Johnny, then you should hopefully enjoy.
This face doesn't crack a smile or laugh ever.
never seen you crack a smile. Yeah, that could be a problem. Apart from that, you should get on all right with it. If you can, your memory seems pretty sharp. So,
and even if it's not, it's hilarious either way.
Yeah, if it's not, it's even better.
Exactly.
Yeah, I mean, this is the kind of game that I won't care at all whether I win or lose. I think it'll just be fun. I can't think of a game with better artwork.
It's so good. It's amazing.
It is.
I love the number 5 card art on the coffee mug and the 7 card art on the water glass that I got. Mm-hmm.
And I know I'm like, you know, on one hand, I say I really like theme. But anybody that knows me knows that I'm a fairly competitive gamer and I put a lot more value into actual gameplay. But this is one of those games that I think, at least from an expectation standpoint, breaks the mold for me, because I probably won't care at all if it's not a 10 out of 10 game for me, because I think just getting it out on the table, seeing everybody else's reaction to Sai's artwork, and introducing them to her artwork, because my in-laws have never played a game with her artwork, I think that in and of itself will be its own reward. And speaking of which, I'm really excited that she's doing Haggis. I can't wait to see what she does with that.
That's true, actually, yeah. So I feel like now's a quick little sidebar to announce the Portland Game Collective is going to be the publisher for the new version of Haggis, and Sai Beppu is going to be doing the artwork. It was announced a few days ago, so very exciting bit of information in regards to that.
Yeah, I can't wait for that. But that was a wicked sidebar from you giving us a list of holiday themed games, and then
I mean, you dropped it in there, so I just, it's exciting. It's a very exciting information,
just
so
like in Haggis, you dropped the bomb. That's great.
Yeah, maybe secretly it's going to be a Christmas edition or Christmas version of Haggis, so it's fitting for the episode.
I mean, I don't know. I mean, is that, do they have Haggis on Christmas? Like, maybe that is a Christmas thing. I don't know.
Maybe in Scotland. Yeah.
All I know is it's a Scottish thing, but I don't know anything else about haggis besides that.
it tastes good. So that's, yeah, there we go. That's the main thing.
Well, anyways, I guess coming back away from that sidebar, the next game, which is a trick taker, is Jingle All the Way, It's Turbo Time. So anyone who's familiar with the movie Jingle All the Way will immediately be familiar with the theme and art in this game, which is amazing. The gameplay itself is kind of okay. It's a very take that set collection game that uses quote unquote trick taking. There's no suits. It's just a deck of cards, 1 to 36. And everybody plays a card once around the table. The person who plays the highest card gets to trigger their ability all the way down to the lowest player. And then the top two highest players, the highest numbers played, get to take toys from the shelf, which are all these face down tokens in the middle of the table, and they're set collections. So you get a certain number of these, you'll get X amount of points. If you get Turbo Man himself, you get 10 points. If you get the lottery ball, you get 8 points. So you're just trying to grab these, but there are abilities that allow you to swap toys with other players. So you can take a toy from them. You get to shuffle yours around to do different things. But the thing is, it's very, very thematic. And while it's kind of mean, it's very on brand for that movie. So it is really good. And it's really quick. It's like 10, 15 minutes.
And also the main selling point that you tried to sell me on it was that it's $7 and you can order it on Amazon with Prime shipping. But the last time Ryan said that to me, I ended up with a copy of Space Dragons. So
I still stand behind Space Dragons. Just want to point that out.
The art's good, Johnny, and it's more than the it looks when you read the rules. Don't just take it for granted. It's obviously a good definitely a good game.
I just want to say, if you bought a copy right now, Johnny, December 20th, you could get it by December 22nd on Amazon right now. The thing is, I guess the holiday price, it did go up a little. It's $9 right now.
Oh, so there we go. I'm not getting it. I'm not overpaying by $3. $2. What'd you say it is? Normally $7?
It's normally $7, yeah.
Turbo Man's got to be worth it, right?
Yeah, I'm not overpaying by $2.
I don't know. You get a nice little Turbo Man mini.
Well, that's true.
Maybe we'll watch the movie over the holidays and instead then you want to buy it.
I know I'm the only one who's actually played the game between the three of us, so I'm the one who can really speak for the gameplay. I still think, especially for that price, even at $9, if you have kids, if you have any, you know, family members that have seen the movie, whether it originally came out or it's, you know, your favorite holiday movie you watch now, it will do some justice just for the laughs and the like, oh, that thing. And like, you know, the Santa, he'll deck your halls, bub. Like, that's one of the cards. Like, it's just, it's great. It does really good job at meeting the theme for that game really well.
Yeah, you lost me at the taking clothes off. Where'd you go from there, eh? Ugly Christmas sweaters, was that? I recall you mentioning.
Yeah. Putting clothes back on and putting on an ugly Christmas sweater is the next game.
Do you have any of those, Ryan?
That's a great question. I do have a couple, actually. But yeah, so next one, as we said, is Ugly Christmas Sweaters. This is another trick-taking and also sort of set collection game. More heavily on the actual trick-taking. And it's played where everybody has a secret card in front of in their hand that tells them the type of ugly Christmas sweater that they are trying to make. There will be specific sweater cards available, and everyone's going to play into the trick. Depending on who is the highest card, they get to take from the set collection area first, then the second highest, third highest, and fourth highest, depending on your player count. And you're just trying to take the appropriate ones to try and build these sweaters. There's also sort of Nokus Dice, if anyone's familiar with how the Trump system works in that. It's sort of similar to Ugly Christmas Sweaters, where there's a number and a color that becomes the Trump color and number based on playing stuff.
Cool. Hopefully that gives people enough ideas of what to try to get in over the holidays.
I take it you haven't played Ugly Sweaters then, Johnny?
I have not. I haven't played any of these. I've only heard of them through Ryan, in fact.
A few lying around the house as well, potentially?
I have a single Ugly Christmas Sweater, and it's the... it was from Target. It's got Darth Vader on, and it says, "I find your lack of cheer disturbing."
Oh, well, there you go. Yeah. Well, I think that probably... that hopefully gives people an idea about what they can potentially pick up over the holiday period if you're in the market for it, or whether you're like Johnny and you can't justify that extra $2 on the jingle all the way. Don't worry, there are some alternatives.
Man, you're making me sound cheap. I was kidding. I wouldn't buy that game if it was $5.
I think you should give it a try first, and then we'll see if you'd pay $5 for that game. I'm sure you won't. I already know the answer is no. I don't think you're going to like it, but...
Well, I will. If I try it, I will have already paid $7 or $9.
Well, I'm saying I would do you the honor as a Christmas present to you. I will make a PCIO room for this game so we can play it. I need vindication here, Johnny.
All right. I'll try it on PCIO.
No, we look forward to that alongside Nana, which we need to get you playing as well. So we look forward to that. Mince pie in a PCIO room. You can't go wrong.
Honestly, at this point, it's really more that I don't want to fill my shelves with games I don't love because I am out of shelf space.
No, that I can understand. See, that's a good reason to not want a game. Not that there really has to be any good or bad reason not want a game. If you don't want a game, you don't want a game.
Right, yeah, you don't really have to justify it.
Correct, yeah. But I feel like you have to justify to me. Anybody else listening, it's totally fine. You don't have to get it. But Johnny, I need you to at least try it first.
I will try.
If I explain to you guys why I'm not going to buy a game, you won't believe me, will you? Because you'll just say, well, you'll have it next week.
So. Yeah, you probably already bought it.
Yeah, because we know you'll have it next week.
Yeah.
Right.
You tell us I'm not buying a game, guys, and then there's a picture like 30 seconds before that actually showing you already bought the game. So.
Okay, I caved. I ended up buying it anyway, but thanks for the restraint, right? There we go. Anyway, I should probably tell you guys that anyone listening, unfortunately, there won't be any episodes for a couple of weeks because no doubt we'll be drinking copious amounts of wine and eating Christmas-related items, roast things, potentially. But anyway, we will be back after the holiday period and with back in full force for 2023. I had to make sure I was getting the year right then. Ghost of Christmas thing with past, present, future, getting things mixed up. And we have just launched the Patreon page, if anybody is interested. Obviously, we're all passionate about trick takers and climbers, etc. And we're going to produce the show either way. We're very touched by all the feedback. And anyone, you know, the fact anyone is listening at all is really a Christmas miracle. But if you would like to support the show financially, you are welcome to head over to patreon.com/tricktalkers. Thank you for listening.
It's a Christmas miracle you're listening.
I actually really like that one. That was
bah
good.
Humbug if you're not listening.
Bah humbug. So you've been listening to Trick Talkers. And if you have any questions, comments, recommendations, etc., we can be reached on Twitter at it's at Trick Talkers or via email at tricktalkers@gmail.com. And we'll probably be picking those up over the holiday period. So if you've got anything you'd like us to discuss in 2023, then no doubt we'll give that some consideration. Thank you all for listening. We've been your hosts.
Oh, we're doing an outro hosts.
Oh, we've never done that.
I'm Ryan Outro, Holiday Man.
In case you weren't sure that was Brian, the Yokai Man.
Johnny Out.
And Patrick.
Merry Christmas, Happy Holidays, Happy Hanukkah, Happy New Year.
Happy Kwanzaa.
See you around in...
Bye!